D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Keeping up with the mall theme of today's program. Let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Trevor Maddich, who is brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. So, Trevor, I've been doing something I don't like to do this early in the calendar, and I've started looking at NFL mock drafts. I really try not to do it, but they're everywhere, and I can't stop looking at them. And I do have a question about one player who should be available when the Titans pick at number 4, Carnell Tate. The Titans need a number 1 wide receiver. Could you see Carnell Tate, regardless of where he goes, having a Malik Nabers-like impact in his rookie season?
Yeah, I think he absolutely will. Adam, receiver is typically a difficult position to have a big impact in your rookie year because there's so much more information you have to process when you're coming off the ball against NFL coverages than against college coverages. But Carnell Tate is one of those guys that has a chance to come out fast and become an outstanding number one receiver. The thing is, he is incredibly smooth with outstanding route running skills. In college, you've got guys that are big or that are fast or that are strong, and they use those traits to get open and to win the ball. In the NFL, that's not enough. In the NFL, you've got to be able to run routes precisely for two reasons. One is that's one of the ways that you create separation. And the second is it's one of the ways that you end up in the right spot at the right time, because in the NFL, the quarterback's not throwing to you. Most of the time, he's throwing to a spot, and that ball will get to that spot at a certain moment, and you need to be in that spot in that moment. And so predictable route running is important, and Carnell Tate is also very good at that. He will have a far lower learning curve coming into the league than most other receivers, really, in any draft. And so if the Titans do take him at number 4, I think you can make a case that they should go with somebody who will touch the ball more often or somebody who will be a core line of scrimmage guy. But Carnell Tate, if you're going to go for a receiver there, is absolutely the guy to come in and contribute right away.
Hey, Trevor, I'm pushing for love. I think having a dynamic running back like that for Cam Ward behind an improving offensive line, I mean, I think he can do with the Titans. I think he can do for the Titans what Saquon Barkley was able to do for the Giants that one year, is leading them to help lead them into the playoffs. So what do you think about that, them going that direction?
If they draft Carnell Love, or excuse me, Jeremiah Love, yes, there, I would not be upset at all, because it's one of those things where do you take the guy at the position you need, or do you take the guy regardless of position who's the most talented? And a lot of scouts have Love as one of the top 2 or 3 overall players in this draft. When you compare him to Carnell Tate, as a receiver, Tate will probably have, what, 6 touches, maybe 8 in a game, whereas Love is a guy that can get 8 touches, where you can hand it off to him 12 times and throw it to him 8 times because you can line him up at any receiver position, as well as in the backfield at his native position at running back. And so he's the kind of playmaker that will give Brian Daboll, the offensive coordinator, options to create matchups against linebackers, against safeties, even against corners, because Love will be a powerful body that corners will have to fight when the ball comes in if they put him out wide, where they can get advantages. And I think if you just go with the purely most talented guy available at number 4 when the Titans draft, I don't think you can go wrong going with Jeremiah Love.
Now, the Titans have hired Gus Bradley as their defensive coordinator. We understand that Robert Saleh will be calling the plays. But how does having Bradley on this staff, knowing that he won't be calling the plays, beneficial to not just Saleh, but the team in general on the defensive side of the ball?
I think there's a familiarity there because they work together with the 49ers. And so Robert Saleh knows him, and he knows Saleh, and that's important. And so from a standpoint of calling the plays, you know, that's on game day, the guy that's making the magic happen. But really there's a lot of grunt work and a lot of grind that happens in the week of practice or in the week of preparation that a defensive coordinator can take off of a play caller's plate. if that play caller is the head coach, because Ryan Vercella can't just dig in to the defensive side of the ball and just stay there the whole time. He's got a lot of things he's got to do. And so by bringing in a coach who can be a defensive coordinator who knows Saleh, knows his schemes, knows what he likes, and Saleh trusts, what that does is allows Saleh to cherry pick the things that he likes the best while somebody else is doing all the grind work. And I think that's important.
Talking to Trevor Maddich. So, Trevor, let's look at the Super Bowl matchup. I'm curious your thoughts as we get ready to watch this thing on Sunday. How do you feel about the matchup? Do you think the Seahawks are in the driver's seat here, or what do you think?
Yeah, Willie, I think the Seahawks have to be in the driver's seat just because they're the better team. And they face the tougher schedule. I mean, they both had the same record, I think 14-3 in the regular season, but the Seahawks had a top five most difficult schedule, whereas the Patriots had the easiest schedule. Now, the Patriots took care of business, but they weren't tested the way Seattle was. And I think if you look at the playoffs, where all of a sudden Drake May, the Patriots quarterback, had to face three outstanding defenses, he didn't look so great. I mean, he looked like an MVP candidate in the regular season, and he played well against poor defenses, relatively. But all of a sudden, he's facing the Chargers and the Texans and the Broncos in the first half before the snow kicked in, and he didn't look so good. And Seattle is the best defense in the league by many metrics. And so all of a sudden, you've got the best defense going against an offense that has struggled against top-flight defense in the Patriots. And then you've got an offense that has gone against tougher defenses with Seattle and a more experienced quarterback in Sam Darnold. And I think that's why a lot of people are favoring Seattle right now. Seattle's laying, I think, like 4.5 points right now. And the majority of public bets are on Seattle. And the majority of the handle, the bet dollars, are also on Seattle, which suggests that the smart money is betting Seattle as well, which tells me that the Patriots just might be the team to go with.
Diego Pavia went 10 for 13, 78 yards in the Senior Bowl. I admit I did not see it, but I'm curious, Trevor, I don't know if you get any information based on how we did that week, but the outlook for him is he hopes to get a shot somewhere. What do you think the outlook is for him?
The outlook is height. And that's the only outlook. I mean, he's got the arm to be a successful quarterback in the SEC. He has got the moxie and the leadership to be a successful quarterback in the NFL. But I think they measured him at 5'9". Is that right? At the Senior Bowl. And if you're 5'10", 5'11", yeah, okay, that's good. 5'9", now you're in Doug Flutie range. And the thing about Doug Flutie, you know, the Heisman Trophy winner from Boston College way back in the day. We were actually teammates for a while with the Patriots. And Flutie came into the NFL and nobody gave him a chance because they thought you had to be a tall pocket passer to succeed a quarterback in the NFL. Whenever Flutie had a chance to play in the NFL, he excelled. But nobody would alter the offense to make Flutie their guy. So Flutie went off to the Canadian Football League and lit it up. Then he came back to the NFL, and teams that allowed him to be himself, he excelled again. Well, now I think you've got NFL paradigms that are a little bit more open to college styles because, you know, really starting with the Eagles when Foles was the backup quarterback and they came and won the Super Bowl a few years ago, those Eagles ran by far more RPOs, run pass options, which is a high school concept that came up into the college and then worked its way into the NFL. Well, most people in the NFL thought that wouldn't work. The Eagles won a Super Bowl doing it. And all of a sudden now you've got a lot of college concepts in NFL offenses. And that's what Diego Pavia's hope is, that he can find some place that will say, yeah, you're not tall, but you're not tall enough. But you certainly have shown that you can play at the highest level in college, and we're going to give you a chance, at least on our practice squad. Then he can prove himself. I mean, look at Shedeur Sanders. Shedeur Sanders, for different reasons, fell all the way to the fifth round when a lot of people thought he'd be in a high first-round pick, and he's in his first Pro Bowl in his rookie year. And so the opportunities are going to be there for Diego Pavia, but it will need to be a program that runs the kind of offense that he will excel at, which is to say, move the quarterback a lot, move the pocket a lot, so he's not just standing back there behind that massive wall of people, and then give him a chance to do it. And I believe that he will have a successful career in the NFL, mostly as a backup, because of all the traits that he possesses at the highest levels, which are not matched by his height.
Now, let's get back to the Titans, Trevor, quickly before we get you out of here. How do you think they, because they got a lot of money to spend, and that money may be burning a hole in their pockets right now. I don't know. But how do you think they approach free agency this year, considering the need compared to the money that they have?
I could see them going with receiver to start with. I think the secondary needs to be bolstered. I think they'd like some guys that are experienced to put back there. And, you know, they'll need to do some work at right guard. They'll need to do some work at pass rusher. You don't just want to draft one guy at number four and then say that your pass rush is good to go for the season with Jeffrey Simmons and whoever they draft at number four. But I think what they'll do is have an idea of the guy they want in the draft and use free agency to fill in the team around that player, because they're going to be able to get a top flight receiver or pass rusher or running back or offensive lineman in that spot, or trade back, because it's actually a pretty deep draft when it comes to tackles that can move into guard, and when it comes to receiver, and by the way, when it comes to edge rusher, there's a lot of guys out there. But my thought is that at number four, I could see them going with one of the edge rushers, because it's hard to find guys at the most elite level at that position. And if you have one, if you believe in Reuben Bain or the kid out of Texas Tech, then you got to take them there. And I think in free agency, they'll try to prepare for that moment by bolstering other parts of the roster. And remember that this still is a roster and a team that has to build around Cam Ward's success and progression. So they're going to have to bring in multiple pass catchers. My guess is free agency will be focused on their first.
Trevor Maddich has been our guest on D-Mace. Vingan and Donick, he joins us every Tuesday, and he is brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Trevor, great stuff as always. We'll catch up next week.
Thanks, Adam. Thanks, guys.
615-737-1025. Let's stay on that topic of pass catchers, because there is one pass catcher on the Titans. I'm wondering if he received a bit of a lifeline with the hiring of a specific coach to the staff. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.